accession number 25432.
I can only tell you about the trenches from a sightseer, really, because I was not in the trenches. Bert can tell you more about that than I can, but I can tell you what I've seen in the trenches, what the soldiers put up with. I was lucky enough to be going over them, not with them.
What were you with then,
Raw Naval Air Service. Yes. And I was an aerial gunner.
Yes.
Much to my surprise, I didn't know I was going to be that when I joined up. I thought I was going to be on anti-aircraft guns.
Yeah.
And it wasn't till
Can I put that down?
It wasn't until I got over there,
yeah,
or rather got to the Irish Shepney here,
yeah,
that I realised that I was going to fly. I had no more idea of it than anybody else. We flew 1.5 Strutters out of Dunkirk. We used to go out and spot in, put our artillery, no bombs out. But we used to amuse ourselves some mornings, if we'd got the chance, of strafing German trenches. We strafed them with machine guns, but we did have one special weapon, and it was a dastardly weapon, which we used. They supplied us with spikes at length.
Spikes?
Yes, like darts. No, nothing on them except steel. And we threw them down on the trenches.
What, from your aircraft?
Yes, and if they did happen, they hit a bloke on his head, he got a stiff neck, believe me.
Oh,
you.
Dear. And where were you then, Bert?
Well, I was... well, 1916, you see, we were up at Le Corre. That's where they call Festiford. Islands, they call it the islands because the Jerry used to be able to come right the way round and pinch our rations and get back to his line. From there we moved away on down to the Somme.
And the Somme was a terrible place.
Somme was one of the places that anyone could go and see for themselves. They would wonder how the hell anyone got out alive, because it was absolutely shocking. The officers, we were losing officers right, left and center, because why? The officers had their lapels, captain, lieutenants. We lost so many men in the Somme that the government wanted ex-soldiers or soldiers to go back to Aldershot to be trained for commissioned officers. And that was in after the Somme January or February 1917. We went as we took the Pune in December. He had to retire, so we went back away to St. Quentin.
Oh, I know it.
We were at St. Quentin, and our rations were very, very bad.
What did you have to eat?
We were allowed one glass of water or a cup of water a day.
Is that all?
Mm. That was for everything.
What, to wash as well? Or to drink?
You were darling. You could bath with a cup of shaving water. Have a proper bath.
Have a proper bath with one cup of shaving water.
One cup of shaving water. Mm-hmm. And the rations are very, very bad. Because the time when they used to say, all right, rations are up. And many, many times there would be one loaf of bread between a platoon of soldiers.
How many is it?
14, 16, it's all according to their full strength.
One loaf of bread?
One loaf of bread. And they say, all right, there's one loaf of bread, boys. All right, get the cards out. And they deal the cards, and the ace would always get the loaf. The rest would sit back and eat biscuits and corned beef.
Corned beef.
Dentist corned beef. Right?
Tell me about the Tasmanian pussycats, because that was so nice. Was that you?
No, it was him, but
we
had rats bigger than his tent, but Tasmania pussycats. We had our rations brought up from the Navy.
Yeah, okay, lovely.
And bread was the problem, because the rats would get at it. I mean, you could see the rats running across the floor. That was nothing. But so I had a brainwave. We got an apple barrel, and we tied some rope around the top of it, you see. And we had iron pieces running across our huts, which we used to swing our hammocks on. That sounds funny, doesn't it?
Yes.
I slept in a hammock for a long time. I said, right, put it in the barrel, pull it up by the rope, and they can't get at it. And we sat there that night watching the rats going up the rope, down into the barrel, eating our bread coming down the cave.
Oh, no.
Yes.
No.
And the only thing that used to do us any good as regards rats was when there was a gas attack.
Oh, well, of course, we
that used to kill them. And if you'd ever seen some of the gas masks we had in those days, you'd have killed yourself laughing, dear. You would, really. You had a huge flannel bag that came over your head and tucked down in your tunic, and a pair of huge glasses. They were about as much use as my ankle.
I'll tell you about the gas, our first gas attack up at the Labassie. The engineers come along and worked on these gas cylinders for 2 or 3 days. And they had to wait until
the wind was right.
When the wind was right, of course, these engineers, they let it go. And it was a beautiful sight to see them, the gas go along, kind of a yellow cloud. Well, they got on about 200 yards. Jerry's lines was about 400 yards away. They got about 200 yards down, and they decided, well, they've had enough, so he came back and they cast us.
Yes, the wind changed, blew it all back.
Afterwards, there was no more. That finished. That napooed the gas.
So what with the bad food and the gas attacks?
We enjoyed ourselves, my dear. Really, we
the
had
weather, the
lovely
weather
time.
Was...
I'm not joking now.
Yeah.
You're taking the crowd of men that were there, all types, all kinds.
That's right.
From the professional burglar that joined up to save himself, and some of the aristocratic ones like Bert.
Thank you for those kind.
No, but we really did. It was a wonderful...
What made it wonderful?
The comradeship, my dear.
Comradeship, my dear.
Mm. If one man had nothing, the other next to him wouldn't see it. He share. I've had it done to me, my dear, many times.
Yeah. So your last cigarette.
Yes, cigarettes.
Cigarettes, yes, my dear. If you went over the top ration with cigars.
Well, they were
not
they
cigars,
were for you to take when you when you went up above, so you shouldn't be. No, but
comradeship.
Lots of things we used to do. We hated the French as much as they hated us.
That is true.
We did, really. If we had any chance of robbing the French of anything, we did it. And I luckily was given a tin, which I thought was, you know, a tin of fruit. And we were going to have such a feed with this between us. We opened the tin up and it was worms for catching fish. Oh, yes. And we had such a hell of a lot of tinned salmon sent out to us. Oh, we were all salmon. Salmon and bully beef. I think they built your trenches up with some of that bully beef, didn't they?
That's correct.
Cases of bully beef.
I've seen rows and rows of nothing else but bully beef.
Yeah.
So was the troops could turn running and march through.
You used it in the place of duck boards. Well, I know this for a fact, although I was never in the trenches. The trenches were built up with boxes of bully beef. We had so much bully beef and salmon, and incidentally, our rations were marvellous. We used to chuck half a shoulder of mutton with a French kid to get him out the way of the door when we were having dinner. But we had a marvellous cook. And I said to him one day, I said, look, Mike, I said, we've got a hell of a lot of salmon. I said, wouldn't it be nice if we could have a nice salmon mayonnaise, which I'm very fond of, isn't it? He said, well, we can have that. He said, you let me have the salmon. He said, and the rest of the stuff, I'll make it for you. I also told you, first of all, we had arrangements in the squadrons that we had for A, B, and C flight. They were three flights. Now, the people that worked in those flights lived in a hut, you see, And out of those men would be probably 30 to 40 men in a hut. But you choose two of those who had no qualifications, actually, but used to run around cleaning the oil off the wings of the kites and that kind of thing. You choose two of those, one to keep the hut tidy and one to work your rations for you. And we had a rule there that we subscribed 2 francs per man per week for extra stuff which we used to buy down in the French towns to make our stuff up. That was how we used to get our posh grub, mayonnaise, one thing and another. But in comparing what we had then and what the troops had, you could not compare them. Mm. But that didn't last very long with us. No. We eventually got into tents. And Jerry, I don't know whether you remember it, but in about 17, he brought out a new, what they called a personnel bomb. Do you remember the one, instead of going into the ground and exploding, it used to explode on the top. And
oh, you mean that? Well, that was...
We called it the personnel bomb.
That was the bomb that mustard gas.
Yeah.
Burn your ass and all that.
He
used to turn around and throw these heavy shells, and they would be, well, what they call duds. They'd go toop and would never explode. But the dampness and the shell, of course, it would, like a chemical, it would spread all over the ground, and the troops come along there, a lovely, lovely dry place. They thought, all right, we rest here for an half an hour. They rest, and consequences, they sit down. 2 days after, they're behind them, burnt.
No purpose telling you about the people, the organizers that stayed at home. Now, I'm going to give you one. That shell, what I was speaking about, an order come from London. We were living in tents at the time, 8 men to a tent. The order came from London that all troops in the Royal Naval Air Service were to dig 6 feet down in the ground and erect a tent over that. So for that winter and the following summer, we lived in a little, nice little hole in the ground. No beds, just a ground sheet and a couple of blankets.
Oh,
it's a fact, my dear.
And the winters were very bad,
were they? Oh, they were.
Winters were very, very bad. Also, you see that we had no dugouts. I want to talk about some.
Yes.
There was no dugouts whatsoever. The only dugouts was the Germans. They were all prepared.
Yes, but
all we had to do was to turn around and dig.
And then
pack up with sandbags.
Filled up with water, did they?
Yeah, I tell you. What about the elephant roofing you had, like the zinc roofing, but they called it elephant steel, which they used to go.
Yeah,
to put on
but
the
then,
top.
But then you must bear in mind.
That buried you, but still, that was only part of the
I'm
job.
Really talking about the actual battles, because you see, very often you were in the line for six days, 2 days, 12 days, and you get relieved. Well, then, of course, if you got relieved, you got a good bunch, they'd turn around and try to make good shutters. Well, they wouldn't stand anything at all. Always they were more or less bulletproof. Because they wouldn't stand...
they wouldn't stand any shells,
or anything. They wouldn't stand anything whatsoever. And I'll tell you one officer in talking about Lagore, we had a bombardment. Jerry used to bombard partly, as he says, at a certain time. He'd bombard, he'd send what they call coal boxes.
Yeah, they were nice.
These coal boxes used to come over and they were explosive. They used to go and they used to play up hell. And this is the truth, in fact, that the same person I'm going to talk about, so much as me, for God's sake. We had an officer, second lieutenant, he was bombarding us very, very bad. And the sergeant shouted out, "You better put your behind, you better put your ass in." All right. And the officer shouted out, "I don't mind where I'm hit, Sergeant, as long as I'm not hit in my hands." He was still bombarding. All of a sudden he had it. He had his hand.
Oh.
That same person is living in Bristol today. That same person is a well-known organist.
Oh, I know him. Yes, Douglas Fox.
He was in my same outfit.
Was he?
I'll tell you where he got it. Yeah. He got it up Lagore, and our headquarters then was the Red House. You ever see him mention the Red House?
Yes.
And that is he was our, my own company.
It's very easy to categorize novelists in either.